Hey, this is Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to do a brief shout out to a partnership of ours, the Freedom Festival 2024 in the heart of New England on May 4th. Participate in a unique celebration where the pursuit of freedom, health, and community values come together through engaging activities and inspiring experiences. Immerse yourself in all things Bitcoin. That's right, including Bitcoin speakers, Bitcoin music, Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast Barbecue, Bitcoin workshops, and etc. Participate in interactive demonstrations like parkour, cold plunge, wow, that sounds fun, hot tub, a soccer contest, and a raffle with prizes. Buy your tickets today. You can enter our affiliate link, HighRate20, for a 20% discount. You could also visit, for more information, massadoption.net. Anyway, on to our show.
Screw it. Here we go.
If it's closed source, it's going to turn into, you know, again, some sort of slave tech where it's going to tell you, oh, no, this is it. Oh, no, you can't ask about this. Like, you know, going to back to Gemini, like people were asking to generate images of like Tiananmen Square in 1989. And he would say, oh, sorry, I can't talk about this. Like, or they would ask about January 6th and say, like, show me a picture of a protest on January 6th. In front of the Capitol, and the instead of giving you an image, it gives you a text that says, sorry, this is a political and I can't talk about this. Like, how, what kind of like nightmare is this that you're asking specific questions and you're getting schooled by AI?
Hey everybody, this is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Welcome back to High Hash Rate. First things first, if you listen to the audio version of High Hash Rate, you've heard us recommend products and events from some of our guests and our friends. We're very selective about who we partner with and only recommend products we use ourselves. They're always largely just seeking to provide value for value. So we're excited to announce that we've partnered with Bitbox and we started using their fully open source Bitcoin only hardware wallet to protect our life savings. I personally started using Bitbox because it's open source, it's demonstrated secure, and is one of the only hardware wallets which supports the anti-klepto protocol, which actually protects your hardware wallet from accidentally leaking your private keys, which is a vulnerability that some of the, or many of the other hardware wallets on the market have to this day. But arguably the most important reason I use Bitbox is because of the user experience. I personally use it with Sparrow, but in my opinion, the Bitbox O2 desktop and Android apps are the killer UX that technically savvy and inexperienced hodlers, even Mike, will find easy, intuitive, and enjoyable. So we'll be talking more about Bitbox. Yeah. We'll be talking more about these guys and why we think you should try it in the future episodes. But if you want to buy one today, you can use the link in our show notes and you'll get 5% off your order. I really do enjoy the product, guys. I think you'll like it. This is one of the episodes I've been most excited about maybe ever since we've done this show, since we started it. It's Charles from Sats for AI. And you've probably heard, again, me on the show talk about how I think there needs to be a better integration between AI and Bitcoin. And I think it's a natural, like they're just like natural entities. Like AI is a natural consumer, a natural user of Bitcoin. And I've had this idea for months, and then Charles reaches out to us and he explains that he has created this product right out of my mind, and it's awesome and it works. And I knew somebody smarter than me was on this already. And I'm excited that that's true, but Charles, what's going on, dude?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I don't know about smarter than you, but definitely the entrepreneur, cells in my body. So that's what pushed me to start acting. But you know, I think it's for most Bitcoiners, it just makes a lot of sense once you understand Lightning and micropayments and how fast they could go, and you know, energy, like Bitcoin's energy, and you understand that AI runs on energy. Like it just makes a ton of sense. And you know, I think that AI is the killer app for actually Bitcoin payments.
Yes.
And so I think that's something that also hopefully, accelerates Bitcoin adoption along the way.
And that people that are just into AI and not necessarily into Bitcoin will look to Bitcoin to be like, how do I get such a great, cool, cheap, affordable AI? Well, you need Bitcoin for it. And so that, you know, hopefully that even accelerates that move to hyper Bitcoinization.
So go ahead, Mike.
There's one thing you made me think of back there, Dan, and it just pointed something incredible out to me. And that was, you said you had this thought of this product, right? And you end up, if you have these, you know, if you have a thought enough and you want to manifest it in the world, it actually does come back to you because you're searching for it.
Right.
And you found
it. Right.
That's such an interesting thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, for instance, can I give one example? I know I'm hijacking this entire conversation. One example is that I had this idea of doing a Bitcoin film fest, and then it was created and I found it. Basically, it wasn't me that did it. It had already been there. That's all I'm trying to say.
No, that's true. I totally agree with that. I think that happens all the time. I think that there's very little. We talked about this with Bram recently, right? Like, a lot of people have ideas, but it's people who execute on them and like build them and manifest them that you'll end up finding each other. But we're talking so deeply about this already, but can you actually explain what Sats for AI is to the listener?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so essentially, I've been working in AI for 7 years. And when ChatGPT came along, it was like, so for the first 7 years, it was like, or 6 years, it was like, there were a lot of players in the AI field. It was, you know, there were a hype around it, but no one was like a clear like leader that, I wasn't fearing like a monopoly in AI for the first 6 years. And then ChatGPT comes along and there's such a step up from what existed before. And so all of a sudden there's like the risk of seeing what we've seen in previous waves of tech, which is one big guy comes along and he just takes the market. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen it with search. Now it's a word. You say, just Google it.
Yeah.
And my fear as a Bitcoiner was that it was going to, that next wave again was going to be one big large player, and it was going to be, oh, just ChatGPT it.
Okay.
So
you approached it from like almost, if you could go back in time to the 90s and the internet's coming along, if you could foresee kind of Google centralizing everything and Microsoft centralizing and the negative consequences that resulted from that, which we're almost trying to undo with Bitcoin, right? Like, it's almost like we're trying to undo that mistake. So you're approaching it from that. So you had experience. You were one of the people who was in AI before everybody realized what AI was and that it was such a big deal. Can you explain, A, what you did the past 6 or 7 years, and B, kind of what was that evolution of AI where you said there just wasn't a whole lot happening for the first few years and then boom, ChatGPT comes along? Like, did you see ChatGPT coming along? Did it just explode out of nowhere? Like, what was that, you know, that journey like and that process like before ChatGPT?
Right. Yeah. So for the first 7 years, so I started as an employee in like an AI kind of studio or firm in Montreal. And so it was really, that was 2017. It was funny because at the time people were so confused. Like, you would meet people, you talk about AI, and they'd say, okay, and what about blockchain? Like, to them, like, it was such a wave at the same time of 2017. But I was more on the like business development side, but so it was like trying to understand what it is, what it does, talking to the techie people and understand like what can it really do, and then talking to clients or businesses or whatever and trying to understand like, is there a need, like, is there something that you have that a problem that you have that this can solve. And so it was having a lot of this conversation. And so along the way, eventually I started my own AI company. That was 2019, my first one. And it was creating a model to read terms and conditions. So again, you know, as a Bitcoiner, don't trust verify. Like, I didn't want to read the terms and conditions, but I also don't just want to say, I agree to the terms and conditions without reading them. So I created a model that would read them for you and kind of highlight them and tell you like, this is what you need to watch for. And this made me very aware about like privacy and like why you need to read terms and conditions and like what's happening with your data. It was along the line of also like in Europe with GDPR or RGPD, sorry, I keep it anyways. And so it was understanding your data, what it is, like what they're going to do with it, et cetera, et cetera. So it was kind of like the first step. But going back to your original question, like in the very early days, actually, Google was open sourcing a lot of stuff. So the wave that we see in ChatGPT in 2023 dates back to, I think, actually 2017, when Google open sourced the first kind of transcoders. And they would release papers. So for the longest time, that field of AI was actually researchers in universities, often kind of on the payroll of bigger companies, but like publishing papers and saying, this is what we've done, and this is how we've done it, you know, this is how we did it, and this is how good it gets. People would take the paper, would read it, they would improve on it and improve and improve and improve. So it started with like something that was called Google BERT. And then, you know, again, it was released. People would improve. They call it Roberta. They would kind of make improvements to the actual, technology behind it and release it open source. So again, for the longest time, it was like this kind of like open source approach to it. And then I saw some like before ChatGPT, which officially when it came out and everybody talked about it, that was November 2022. Earlier that year, I started to play with some of ChatGPT's like earlier version. And it was already getting pretty good. And I was at the time kind of thinking like, oh, this is going to be used for social engineering. Like, you know, spamming people or sending an email and like pretending to be someone else. It was just so good at creating like
email messages. And now you see on Twitter, you see like the XRP guy or Michael Saylor making videos like, hey, scan this thing, send me money. And now people are, it went from just like, hey, a pop-up chat bot or some sort of like email to like they're making very realistic videos of very realistic people that look real.
Right.
And okay.
So, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so that was kind of like the trend. But then again, when the actual newer version came out, I played with it a little bit and I was like, oh, wow. Okay. No, those guys have really taken it up a notch. I think one of the most underestimated aspect of what they did was actually make the UI so friendly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Evolution. There's stuff that you couldn't do before, but I would say about 70% of what ChatGPT does, you could do 2 or 3 years ago, but it was through API. It was like, you had to be a developer. You had to know what you were doing. Like you had to be some sort of like data scientist or whatever. Like you had to have some knowledge to use it. What ChatGPT did is like making it with an easy like interface. All of a sudden you just like open this market to literally hundreds of millions of people, like at least tens of millions of people. Like it's the fastest service to 100 million users. I think it took them like a matter of weeks and they had 100 million people signed up.
Right. It's huge.
They essentially
said, use this like you would use Google, maybe. But you can tell a little bit, you can be a little bit more descriptive. You can be a little bit more, specific. And the more specific you are and the better you are at verbally and like, I guess, digitally communicating with somebody, typically the better you are with getting result, like practical and good results from AI. Right. And so like this prompt engineer, they talk about stuff like this. So it was like really this use case and this UI was what really set things in motion. But I think my next question is, what is it about? We hear so much like AI takes so much energy, all these GPUs, NVIDIA is going crazy because of AI. We're going to run out of electricity. What is it about AI? What is going on? What are the mechanics behind why that much energy is needed and what's going on behind the scenes?
Right. So, I mean, there's two approach to it. The approach that OpenAI has taken, and you might have seen, a few weeks back, he apparently, I think they blew it out of proportion, but Sam Altman was apparently walking around and asking for money and saying he wants to build like a $7 billion industry for chips and GPUs and whatever. And anyway, so all this to say that this is their approach. And I think that's the wrong approach. And I think this is how they're going to lose. But describing what they're doing is, they're trying to get as big a data set as possible. And they're trying to build like a giant model. Essentially, it's like trying to build like an Airbus 380 there. But it's a great you know, it's great for certain use cases, but it's not great if you want to go to work, right? Like, you're not going to take a fucking massive airplane to go, you know, a couple of miles down the street to go to work, right? So anyway, so that's what they're trying to build. They're trying to get as big as a data set as possible. They're trying to build one model that does everything. And so it's massive data to start. And then the model needs to be trained on that data. And so the bigger, the more data you have, the longer it takes all those GPUs to run to kind of like fine tune based on that model. So that's why they need crazy compute and crazy power.
So my, it sounds like from, I'll let you go in a second, Mike, but it sounds like to me, if I'm thinking about this from like an economist or a social, a political scientist model, it sounds like that's an inefficient way to do AI, for lack of a better term. The better thing that we should think about is maybe division of labor in AI, like breaking it down to specialized tasks, like AI for helping software engineers, AI for this or that, for medical, for whatever. And it's instead of this giant model that's just supposed to be like the God model that knows everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially, that's what it is. I think they're, you know, they're trying the, it's hard to know what's marketing and what's the real strategy. You know, they, as a CEO, I can appreciate that you're trying to hype up your product and you're trying to get people to talk about it, everything. But, you know, any article about OpenAI talks about AGI, so artificial general intelligence, which is essentially, you know, the moment the computer becomes smarter than us and, you know, they can do everything we can do, but except better. And so I think that's partially what they're chasing. And so that's why they're trying to make that one model that can do everything. I, from a technical standpoint, I don't think the tech that we currently have gets you there. And so, you know, I don't think they're going to win that race again, based on what we currently have. It, you know, you never know where innovation is going to come from, but that's, so I think that's because that's their logic. They're like, we want to build AGI, and so therefore we want to build like a massive model. For that massive model, we need more and more and more and more data. And to train that model, we need more and more and more and more compute. And we need, so we need the chips. So we need NVIDIA. We eventually want to build, we eventually want more than one provider, right? So that's why they're trying to go around and to raise apparently $7 billion, or at least, you know, talking about a $7 billion industry, because that's what they need. Because otherwise, I think they go bankrupt. Like, you know, like,
right, right. It's,
you're trying
it's
to
too
get,
much.
You're trying to push back on your cost. Is... You're trying to lower your own cost by kind of like forcing your business partners to kind of go and take on debt, which is like, again, if you're into Bitcoin, you're like, this is such a fiat move. But anyways, so I think that's what they're trying to do. So that's why they need so much power and they need so much compute. Where when you go the, when you look at some, what some of the open source companies or labs or studios have done, they take a very different approach, which is we want to try to make a small model, but with high quality data in it. And just kind of like what you were saying, it's like, maybe just focuses on a few tasks and it's very good at those few tasks. And potentially you have several models. Yeah. And then you have several models. You have one model that does one, you know, one or two tasks very well. And then you have another one for another, like, and you kind of like spread this across the number of different models. And by doing this, then those models are a lot cheap, like faster and easier to train. And eventually even they can have, so there's two parts to building AI, to AI.
I'm going to step in real quick. Like, only are they easier to train, right? They're more flexible. They're more adaptable. It's easier to make changes, to pivot, to make updates. You don't have to just start over with this giant thing.
When you retrain.
It's much more lightweight and efficient. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the model that you have after. So again, there's two steps to creating a model. Well, to a model. One is training it. So that's the part that's the most compute, like, intense and requires all this power. And then after that, they're serving it. So it's, you know, inference. So you go and you ask a question. The model doesn't retrain based on your question. It just like tries to provide the answer. So that's a lot. That's still, you know, you still need a GPU for that if you want fast inference. But it's not
as energy intensive as training it. But again, once you have a big model, it is still very, you know, hard to get the answer. It's still going to cost a lot more than if you have a smaller model to get the same answer. And the other thing is, like, once you get open source, there's like other companies that are starting to look into like building chips that are specifically for a language. So there's a company called Grok. They came out with what they call LPUs, which is language processing unit. And they're dedicated to serve the models, the language models. And they are like literally five times faster than OpenAI. But OpenAI can't use that tech, right? Because it's not their own stuff, right?
Right, right. And I want to clarify, Grok, this is not ex-Elon Musk Grok,
so
right?
It's Grok with a K.
Chamath Palihapitiya. Yeah.
Grok with a K is actually Twitter's AI.
Okay.
And Grok with a Q is the company that's making the LPUs. But you're right, it's kind of confusing.
Right, yeah. I just wanted to make that distinction because I know the LPUs, that's Chamath, some people like him, some people don't, but that's his company. Yeah. And that's, I've heard a lot of good things about that. So, yeah.
When we were on a conversation prior to this recording, you mentioned something really interesting to me. It was a story. And I kind of wanted to capture it again. And I'm wondering if you can, like, if you can remember it. But what I wrote down was that basically the trade-offs of this technology. And I think you gave an example of a question that was posed and then the AI spat back poem five times or something like this.
Right.
Where it just couldn't. This was an interesting
thread
that I wanted to unpack again.
Okay.
This data is in this model.
Yeah. So I'll explain, I guess, the four main like pillar of what is wrong with closed AI. It doesn't have to be, you know, they're called OpenAI. It should be closed AI. Elon Musk is suing them. Anyways, it's a whole mess. But so obviously I talk mostly about OpenAI, but it applies to any, you know, one company taking over the market and becoming the dominant player. And so as part of those four kind of drawbacks, which again, this is based on my Bitcoiner's observation of it. One of it is about privacy. So I'll try to list the four, but remind me if when I'm done with my answer, if I didn't mention specifically that thing. But again, if you look at Bitcoin and what is key to Bitcoin, and then you look at AI and you see what is like, again, having one model or one company running it, you see four, I see personally like four main things that are wrong that will prevent this technology from helping human flourishing the way that it could if those flaws weren't there. So the number one is permission. You know, that's one thing that is so great about Bitcoin is it's permissionless. Anybody, you can just download the wallet. It doesn't matter your age, which country you're in, your skin color, your sexual preference, you name it. Like anybody can join the Bitcoin network. With OpenAI, but any other system, you need to create an account. And so then based on that account, you have to ask permission if you want to use it. There's a check. Is this account allowed to use this? So that's one thing that's kind of stopping certain people from using it, especially if you want to use the more advanced version where you need a credit card. So as Bitcoiners, we know, but you know, not everybody has a credit card. Like the financial privilege of having a credit card is not fairly distributed across the planet. So in Africa, it's like 10% of the population has a credit card. So if you're in Africa, you don't get to use the most advanced version of the AI, OpenAI system. Because you don't have a credit card. And so, one of the major drawbacks I see here is like you're stopping certain people from using it, from creating value for themselves, for their community by using this very powerful tool. So you're going to spread the gap between the haves and the have-nots. If you're in a country where you can use AI, you can very quickly with a few employees, you can create a super fast-growing startup. But if you're in Africa, you don't get to do that. You don't get to create that value. So, and it's one of the, one of the aspects. The other aspect, and maybe I can take an example here, but very recently, there was like some sort of a competition that was launched. They found in Italy Roman rolls from the Vesuvio eruption. So the rolls are rolled up
but they're kind of burnt. Mm. But so if you unroll them, you destroy them. But if you X-ray them, you get to see where the ink was. But it comes out as a really weird image, obviously. So the competition was, please create an AI model that, based on the X-ray, can turn this into actual text that we can read so that we don't destroy it. And we get access to this knowledge, you know, this 2,000-year-old knowledge that was written there by the population at the time. And so, again, because no one could do it. So they just, we're just going to make this like a almost like a hackathon. Like it's a competition. Whoever gets to do it gets 50 grand.
It's like a competition to reverse entropy.
That's it. And so essentially, you know, a lot of like people in the AI space looked at this. So obviously they want to, you know, they want the 50K. And the first guy, like the one guy who found it and who created a model that was good enough to start to generate the text, was this, I think, 17-year-old Egyptian guy. And I mean, I'm making assumptions here, but part of the reason he found it is because he's doing a PhD in London. So he's from Egypt. This guy, if he had stayed in Egypt and he was still there, I'm not sure he would have had the tools to create the model that allows us to read those ancient Italian rolls. So we all benefit from, you know, the genius of this guy. Mm-hmm. So when you're making it permission and you're saying, oh, no, this country, no, this, you know, this right. age, you know, no credit card, not for you. Like, we're limiting, again, human flourishing by limiting a very powerful tool to, you know, in the hands of, you know, millions of people, but not the entire planet. So right. that's why, you know, permissionless is very key to me. But no, I'm going to talk about privacy, which I think is when your next subject comes. So another very important aspect of Bitcoin to all of us is privacy. We, you know, we don't want people to know everything about us all the time. We want to choose what we disclose and don't disclose. And so one of the issue again with ChatGPT when it came out is like, you know, there was a free version. And at first you're like, maybe it's just a free version because it's better, they're still testing it or whatever. But now they made it very clear, like, oh no, we will always have a free version. And the free version, just so you know, it actually says in the terms and conditions, like, you give us the right to use anything you type, it belongs to us, and we're free to use it, and we're free to store it, we're free to keep it.
It's associated to your identity and your credit.
Exactly.
Or, you know,
it's associated
account,
to your account. Going
your
back
IP
to the
address.
Permission aspect, you have an account, it's linked to your account, anything you've ever asked. So now there's a honeypot problem, which, you know, based on your credentials, people can see what you've asked.
Extort you with it.
So,
threaten
yeah,
you with it.
So,
yeah.
So that's exactly it. It was revealed a few days ago that I think 225,000 accounts, like OpenAI accounts, were for sale on the darknet. So if you buy one of those accounts and you log in, or you buy the whole pack, obviously you wouldn't buy just one, but if it's a paid account and there's a credit card linked to it, then people can create an API key and use it and sell the services it and use your account and your credit card to, you know,
right.
sell other stuff. And then eventually
right.
you would rack up on your credit card, like, you know, thousands of $20,000 worth of API calls. Wouldn't be a surprise to me.
And
that's one risk.
Think about how much information, at a certain point, people that are interacting with AI, like these chat prompts, whatever, every day, you're going to be able to use their history to build a profile of them and then build another model, which kind of makes decisions very closely related to how you would be expected to make decisions. And this could be used to fish you, to reverse it, or to psychologically or socially engineer you to give up information, including maybe your private keys, maybe your passwords, maybe your things like that. Like, somebody could, if it has your information, it's associated to your identity, they could create another AI model to trick you into like just revealing your most sacred secrets.
Exactly. Absolutely. 100%. So the line that I like to use here is like that police line in the movies, like, you know, anything you say will be used against you. Like, this is exactly it. Any data they have can be used against you in different ways. So it can be used again. The OpenAI can be hacked, just like it happened, and then people have access to your data. they can have to, you know, again, it's free, but so if it's free, then potentially ads might come up at one point. And then when ads come up, they have all this information about you and everything that you've divulged about yourself and your preferences and your questions. Like, people go a lot deeper when chatting with what they think is just an AI system than they do on social media, right? So people will ask very personal questions about their, you know, medical history. They will ask relationship questions. They will ask sexual questions. They will ask, like, they will upload
religious
their mortgages
questions.
To ask questions, like anything you can think of. People think it's like a one-to-one. And the analogy I like to make is it's like having a psychologist and it's free. You're like, oh my God, great. I have this psychologist. I go and see her every day and it's free. But every month, this psychologist sits down with like a whole bunch of like people that have shit to sell. And they're like, yeah, so yeah, I think this, you know, I have a client for you. This guy's going to love.
Yeah, this is.
He's going to love your product. And this is how you sell him this product.
Yeah, your chat, your API, your AI history is essentially a database of all of your problems that you're trying to solve. And so now somebody knows all the problems you have, all the anxieties you have, all of the blind spots you have, your religious beliefs, your cultural background, every aspect of you and your verbally communicated problems to it. And that's valuable information.
Exactly. And especially when you see how good the model responds. So not only is this information there, the model is able to extract the data from all this text and to categorize you and say, this person, he likes this and he likes this because of that. And this is how you talk to him. Like, so like, it's very powerful. The more information, not only do they have the information, they have the ability to use this information very precisely. And again, against you. Either as an ad, imagine an ad that is built for you.
Right.
The image is built for you, specifically for you. They know the colors that you like. They know what appeals you. They know everything.
Right.
The text is built specifically for you. So like, imagine how powerful that can be.
Right.
And we're talking ads for product, but now imagine if it becomes political, right? Like, they're trying to get you to vote a certain way or to change your views or, you know, you name it.
And so I think that very clearly underscores the importance of privacy. You mentioned permission. What were the other two?
Yeah, the other two. But I want to answer Michael's question. So, because when you're using the free version, when you're using the paid version, they said they don't. Maybe we'll know who knows. But at least they're honest. If you're using the free version, we will reuse this data to retrain the model and to improve it. And so this data makes it to the data set that retrains the model. And so someone found out by, you know, pure luck that if you ask ChatGPT to, I think it was repeat poem forever. And the answer the model would say, poem. And then out of the blue, it would spit out the email signature of a real person that exists. And it said his name, PhD, his email address, his phone number, like, you know, very, again, very personal information, like out of the blue. Like, eventually they corrected it. Like, once it got, you know, flagged and people started talking about it, they're like, oh my God, yeah, like we need to update this and whatever. But that was one way. But then, you know, so that's, you know, if you're that one person, it sucks. But now there was another scenario where someone who works at a pharmacy and there was some sort of software and he was trying to debug the software. And so he used ChatGPT and he was sharing, like, you know, the issues that he was facing, and he would share the code, right? Like the error code that he had. And in the code was his credentials to access the system. And so I guess that's how, again, then it made it to the data set. And eventually someone was asking similar questions about that software. And out came, in the answer, the credentials to access that software that belonged to that, you know, that other kind of like person troubleshooting.
Right.
So now available to anyone, log into that software. And that's a software that's used by like pharmacies. So you could log in and then you could start seeing like all the prescriptions for people and like any, it's like a nightmare on the privacy front. So that's privacy. So that's two. Third one, which is very important to, again, specifically to Bitcoin, is censorship. So we've seen it with text. You know, the model has been trained a certain way. The company, there's biases. So there, first of all, let's be clear. There will always be biases in a model because it depends on the data that you use to train. But if you only have one company, you only have one type of, you know, you only have one bias. It's like having only one newspaper or one TV channel. You need like a variety, like, and you know there are biases, but at least if there's more than one voice, it's obviously preferable. But so those models, obviously, they have their own biases based on the data, but then they have their biases as the, you know, the political preference of the company. And so eventually, you know, as the CEO of a company, would you agree for your model to talk bad about you? Like, probably not. So anyways, I did a test. I asked ChatGPT about Sam Altman. And the answer that I got was very standard, like, oh no, you know, I asked if there were allegations against him. And the answer I got was like, oh, you know, no, Sam Altman is the CEO of OpenAI. And as far as I know, there's no allegations against him. But when I asked like an open source model, I got like a list of like six or seven, again, allegations. I don't think he's been convicted of anything, but, you know, financial fraud and harassment in the office and like, you know, other stuff like this, which, again, I don't know that it happened, but at least I got, you know, a more neutral or more in line with the question that I was asking. And so it doesn't matter who it is. If it's Sam Altman and it's OpenAI, if tomorrow Google wins the AI race and then it becomes the same thing, like if I start asking questions about Google, like, am I going to get the straight up answer from the model or am I getting, you know, like a censored kind of pre-programmed answer? And what's even scarier to me is that eventually, you know, we've seen it with the Twitter files. And, you know, during the pandemic is the government of the world and especially US, but like anywhere on the planet, went to the centralized platform and, you know, and our Twitter or YouTube or you name it, and they would say, this is the narrative that we want you to push. And how long would it take in the next, you know, if another similar episode happens, now they would go to whatever that platform, that AI platform is and say, well, when someone asks a question about that specific topic, this is the answer I want you to give. And as a user, it's a black box. You don't know. You just ask your question, you get your answer. You don't know, is this answer really a model from the AI, like an answer from the AI model? Or is it an answer that was pre-programmed and that was kind of like implanted there and someone said, ask it. What's even scarier is if you think they might even say, not only do we want you to, you know, give that answer, but they could also say and keep a list of who's asked that question.
Right.
So it gets even scarier. And so that was text. The funny part is like for the longest part, I was like, it's only text, but like very recently, I think people also probably saw this, but like the image generation now started to also be
right
politically censored. So there was all this
people make porn,
you know, drama recently with Google Gemini, and you would ask that question, it just refused to create like a white image
right.
person, and so it would even create like German like Nazi soldier, but they had to be black, like which obviously makes absolutely no sense.
And that's the most recent one. That's the most ridiculous one. But even before that, from a different angle, you're gonna have. Like if you have an OpenAI, like a singular company, there's going to be all kinds of pressure from celebrities, from people who like when they made the porno of Taylor Swift, the AI generated one, like these companies, you see, they might sue. So they might be getting, you might have just crazy woke culture destroying, like, and then censoring like with ideology inside the system. You might have outside pressure from politics, from corporate interests to pressure people not to generate certain content, not to return
right.
certain answers. Like there's, you can't trust
yeah.
this information in this, under this paradigm.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the problem with centralized, right? It's centralized. It's very easy to know which throat to choke, right? Like you're just like, oh, well, there's only a few, like I just go and I say, well, this is what I want. Like, and then this is what you get. So you're centralizing the power, and then you're making it easy for the existing powers to go and leverage that choke point. So that's why, you know, ideally you want decentralized. So anyways, that was my you know, third point. And then the fourth point, which is kind of related to also is how expensive it is. So we've touched about, like, you know, OpenAI and their crazy cost. They raised $11 billion mostly from Microsoft. And that's because, I mean, if anyone who's ever run a startup, you don't raise money just because it's fun or because you can, or because you raise money because you need it to create your product.
And so, you know, creating what they currently have as like GPT-4 has essentially cost them that. It's cost them $11 billion. And now it's very costly to run because, again, they want this really crazy powerful model with all those GPUs that have to, you know, churn. They have to serve the free, you know, the free ChatGPT version to people, which is obviously costing them money every time. So they have to recoup that cost at one point. And so if you compare with like open source models, it's like literally 30 times more expensive than similar open source models. And so that kind of goes back to permissionless. It's like, obviously, if you make it very expensive, you're closing the doors to some people, right? So those are like definitely like the four, you know, the four main drawbacks that I see in closed source AI. And the beauty is, which was very encouraging, is like very rapidly after they came out with ChatGPT, the open source community kind of like managed to, you know, look at it, kind of reverse engineer some of it and take over and recreate some models that were, you know, decent at first, not as good, but like the gap was there. And eventually, because everything's open source, again, you know, someone would release a paper, say, oh, this is how I did it. And then another couple of weeks later, someone else like, hey, yeah, I took what you did and I just improved it this way and whatever. So that you see the gap really closing very, very rapidly between the closed source and the open source. And now there's a ton of like open source models that are really good, that are obviously way cheaper and that don't have that, you know, privacy and censorship.
I want to get into that, the some of the open source alternatives and like how that can evolve and that can improve. But I want to go back to where you're talking about the four pillars. So, I mean, those are very, very much in line with Bitcoin ethos and like the reason Bitcoin exists, right? Like, so like you're just kind of applying that to just another market. And so hearing that and hearing about some of these data leaks and hearing and thinking through, you know, the vulnerability of your chat prompt, and you're essentially the KYCing your AI data. And the danger's there. Exactly. It makes me realize, oh shit, like now that I've started to fully think about these, I've canceled my ChatGPT subscription, which I had. I didn't use it a ton, but I used it enough where I'm like, oh shit, like I don't want to keep using this. And I didn't, I need it. I don't necessarily, especially, and I probably use it more than the average person, but the average person doesn't need to use ChatGPT every single day. So like $20 a month, you know, maybe you get a better data set. Maybe it's faster or whatever. You don't want to use the free version. But even if you're using the free, I don't want to do it. I don't want to have an account. So, but like, what's the alternative, right? And it's like, well, the obvious thing, which is what you've built, so we can finally like get into the actual, what SaaS for AI is an alternative. I can cancel all my accounts. I can cancel my, what's like Midjourney. You can cancel all these things that are KYCing your AI use data. And now there's an alternative where you can just show up to the app, you type a, you know, like a similar question that you ask ChatGPT, you can upload an image, you can generate voice, et cetera. And instead of having to do this, you know, in a subscription model from an account, having a credit card, all you have to do is have like a couple of sats on your white Lightning wallet. You can scan an invoice and you have access as little or as much as you want to this technology, to these models, to these sources. If you are a professional, if you are somebody who relies on this for your career, or you're just somebody who uses it casually, you can use it as little as much as you want, and you just a few sats at a time. And it's so easy to use, and it's very similar to like ChatGPT, the easy prompts, and some of the other alternatives. So that's what you've built. And let's kind of go back to the beginning of this journey of you building Sats for AI and like what that's been like and how you've how you thought about it and how you've built it.
So I saw all this that was wrong with the closed AI, and then I saw the very promising open source AI. The problem is the open source AI is it's still very tech savvy to use it. So you need to first of all, you need to follow the trend, because there's a new model coming out pretty much every week. So you'd be like, okay, what's the best model today? And it's hard to keep up. And then you have to download it on your computer, and you have to have a very powerful computer. Ideally, you want one like a kind of, you know, with a GPU or their recent like Mac, or, you know, something that has like, you know, the power to run the model so that you don't wait for 5 minutes for your answer. And then, you know, even then it's, you need to install it, and it's kind of like not super user friendly in terms of how you're going to ask the question, et cetera, et cetera. So I saw the friction on the open source models. And so that's exactly like you said. I'm like, we need to make it as easy as ChatGPT, but using open source models and with Bitcoin values, you know, just like we described. So permissionless. So you don't even need to create an account. Why do you have to create an account? Other than maybe, you know, I'm having this conversation. People are saying, oh, maybe I want to save. I don't want to have to pay like every time. I would like, so that there's an option maybe for
they
that.
They can choose that. Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. You can choose that. But if you don't want to, and you just want to ask one time a question, or you just want to generate one image every now and then, you don't need to create an account. You can just go like, I don't need to know, again, I don't need to know your name or your address or whatever. All I care that you pay me for the cost that I'm going to pay.
Right.
Like,
and if, even if you did want to create an account, right? Like there's down the line, there's no reason you couldn't just use your Oster or NPub. Like this is my Oster or NPub and I want everything. I want this saved, my account, my history, my you know, my balance, whatever. I just want to save to this Oster. You don't have to give them your email address, your driver's license, your credit card, right? Like it's whatever you want to reveal to track your own information.
Exactly.
So it's not this honeypot out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. Making a platform that's as easy to use, but no signing up, no data tracking. Ideally, not censored. Like I said, any model is going to be a little bit biased, anyways. But at least no clear censorship, less censored, at least you can
use
trust.
A VPN. Yeah,
that's it. And you can trust that I'm giving you the answer the model's giving me. Like, if you want, you can download the model somewhere else and run it on your computer, or ask a friend that has a powerful computer, ask the same question that you would on the platform, and you would see that you get the same answer. Like, I'm not manipulating the answers like a centralized service would do. And the beauty is, by using Lightning, I can charge like nothing, literally. The models are already way cheaper being open source, but the inference and everything, and my business model makes it that I can charge you, you know, next to nothing. So it's at this point, it's 21 sats for one prompt, which is like 1 cent, right? So before you reach the $20 that you would pay for ChatGPT, kind of like advanced version, you have to ask like 2,000 prompts, like, so, you know,
right,
on a monthly approach, I think that's quite something.
I don't think you can make 100,000 requests to ChatGPT for that price, right?
Like, they've set a limit. Initially, they didn't, right. And then eventually, again, I really suspect they're not making money. They're not even making money on the $20 per month, right, for some people. So they're starting to lower the quality of their responses, and they're also starting to put limits. They only started in January. They said now you can only ask 30 prompts per 4 hours, I think, or something like this. So they're limiting how many prompts you can do in a certain window. And on top of it, they say this is the official limit. And sometimes when there's too many people using it, we might even like make that window even shorter, that you can only ask, you know, 30 questions
if you really, really need it more than somebody else, you can't just bid a higher amount for your extra requests, right?
It doesn't have a natural market like that.
But like, you could, you know, theoretically, if like there was a billion people trying to use sats for AI, it's like, well, you're going to run into some bandwidth issues somewhere. And it's like, well, you know, if you've got 25 cents per request, if you need it, this is part of your business model. Like, this is, you know, it can be like this load balancing, right? Like, you'll have some people that are just constantly running requests against AI in the background, and they'll turn that off when you know, everybody else is rushing it. And I don't know. I'm just similar to Bitcoin.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, there's plenty of inspiration to be drawn from Bitcoin if you see how the genius behind every decision that was made and the incentive models is just so perfectly lined up. And you know, the success is here 15 years later. It's still stronger than ever. So yeah.
Yeah, but back to SaaS AI, like what features, does it have now? Like, can you generate voice? Can you upload images and have them scanned? Can you use it like a chat prompt? What are the limitations, or what's available today, and what's coming in the future?
Right.
Yeah. So for now, we have two text models. So one that is kind of like a general model. You can ask questions. You can make it write an essay about something. Like it's again, kind of like general AI. We have another text model that's specifically for coding. So this is if you have code and you are writing code about a certain thing, or you're running into a bug or whatever, and you want to paste your code and say, improve this or fix this, or how do I create this? So that's like a little more advanced. So that's on the text front. Then we have an image generator. So again, this is where you text to image. So you describe the image that you want to see. Ideally, the more details you give, the better the results are going to be. You can also even like upload a similar image. So you can say, I want an image that does this, but, you know, take your inspiration from that existing image, and it will try to kind of reproduce the style and the color scheme and et cetera, et cetera. And then we have another model that's for vision. So that's the one where you upload an image and you ask questions about the image. So quick example, I was in Costa Rica in January. And I went to the farmer's market, the, you know, the kind of Bitcoin jungle farmer's market there. So they had like a ton of fruits that were like lined up in on a table. And I wanted to buy some of them, but I didn't necessarily know the name, like in Spanish. But even sometimes like you see the fruit and you're like, I'm not even sure like what this fruit is. Obviously, it's like those exotic fruits. So anyways, all this to say that I took a picture with my phone and I uploaded it. And I said, what are the fruits on this pictures? And how do you say it in Spanish? And so it took this, it analyzed, and it said, oh, here are the fruits that you know, on the table from left to right.
Wow.
And here's how you say it in Spanish. So now I was able to like order and say, oh, you know, whatever, right, using the Spanish words to order what I wanted. Anyway, so it's kind of like one of those things where you have the image, but the model is able to analyze the image and give you answer and provide specific,
awesome,
like information around it.
I didn't know that was a...
And then we have a fourth model that's kind of, it's more of a toy right now because it's kind of limited, but it's still kind of fun to try and see. It's a kind of voice, so it's text to voice. So you type a text and you can choose different, there's four different types of voices that are kind of inspired by actors, but I think you don't have the rights for it. So you have to say like, you know, just the first name of the actor, so Morgan, and you have to guess who... which actor, and you recognize the voice, obviously, but anyways, and you can type like a quick message and it would sound like it's that person kind of reading your
sure
message, but it's limited to, I think, max like 25 or 30 seconds for now. So, you know, it's fun to play with, but I don't see real.
Good for making memes. Good for making memes.
That's it. But it's, yeah.
Can I ask one question that made me think of this?
Sure.
What happens to the data after someone plugs it into Sats for AI?
Right. So we don't keep anything. So we take it, we run it to the model, then and out it goes. Like we have no use for it. And we, you know, it'd be extra cost for us to keep it. And plus we can't tie it to any user anyways, right? So like there's literally no incentive for us to keep it in any way, shape or form.
Well, so that makes me think like you're taking sats or you're taking data. That's the way it goes, right? So
yeah,
if you take sats, that's a much more honest direction of
100%. 100%.
You know, like, what I'm saying?
When people are taking data, it's because they couldn't take payment. Like it's an indirect form of payment. It's far from perfect.
Value for value.
That's it. And you're taking data in the hope that at some point you will be able to turn this data into some sort of profit.
They're speculating
here, like,
on your
we're
data.
Short, that's it. We're shortcutting the whole thing. We're like, no, go straight through. Like, give me the money that I need to run this service with a profit. And that's all I care about. Your data is less valuable than the sats that you will give me. So this is what I want. I want the sats. Like, I don't care about your personal data.
I would love it. I mean, I'm just thinking personally about like features that I would love. So like,
yeah,
just take these as ideas.
Yeah, so, but going back to this, so again, the audio is kind of foreign to play, but anytime a new model comes out that is powerful, that is cool, that we like, and that has a real kind of like value that I see that people could use, we add them. You know, we started vision, we didn't even think about a vision, and a vision model came out, we tested it, works great, perfect, like boom, we publish it. We're about to publish a new model that would be voice to text. So this one is like you upload like a you know, an audio file that you have, and it will transcribe everything that is being said directly into text. We are also looking at another model that would be kind of like create subtitles in a video file. So, you know, good for if you want to do like a quick Twitter video or whatever, you just talk and then you upload that video and then it's going to create the subtitles directly in the video file. So, you know,
nice.
It's a booming industry. There's like new models, new powerful tools that are coming out like weekly. That's part of the role that we also, you know, the value that we bring to users is that you don't have to try to keep up. We will be the one, you know, doing the keep up. And whenever we see something cool, we'll just publish it. And my view is like, I just want users to, every time they come to sats4ai.com, like to just feel like, oh my God, like, yeah. And, you know, it's even better than last week, right?
Right.
Because we have new models and or more powerful models.
What I love also, again, like back to this is open source, right? So I'm like, we were talking about the possibilities that are coming down the road. And like, I'm thinking about what could I try to like, because I'm really interested in AI and how could I bring some kind of practical solution that I think would be really valuable. And what I would love to see like is almost like an Umbral app. So a Sats for AI and Umbral app, you download it. And so you're running it over Tor from your home server, your local node. And you can just go in and create, well, like almost back to this account problem that some people are trying to solve for, where it's like, I'm sending you the sats, I'm getting the information back from Sats for AI, but I'm locally just saving my history, my results locally. I don't have to pay,
right.
You're not paying to store it. Nobody else having to pay to store it. I store what I want locally. I can have that information for myself. And it's like I said, it's secure on my machine, based on, you know, the amount of security that I'm putting behind it. But it's like all these, you could integrate this with Nostr. Like you could scan your Nostr timeline and ask questions and get information about the pictures and the memes people are sharing. You could, I don't know, like you talked about the thing with the pictures on the menu and like asking
right.
what it was and how to say it in Spanish. Where like you could eventually build onto this where you just hold your phone, your camera out and you scan the horizon and you speak into it almost like Siri. And you can say,
right.
like, tell me where I'm at. Tell me what the distance is between here and there, yada, yada. It's like so many possibilities. And it's like, oh, this is the opportunity where it's like everybody who has these great ideas, if they don't have to like get a job at OpenAI, they just use open source solutions. They use Sats for AI. They build upon it. So that's what I'm thinking about. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. 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 100%. I think, you know, we're still in the very early days of what this technology
right, it's
can
early.
Really do. It's like Google search, in the very, you know, beginning, like you wouldn't go and search every day constantly. Like you would just like have to say, oh, I'm thinking of this. Like it's going to take time, but I think that's where we're heading. And it's very important to me that this technology, again, is open source and has a variety and people can trust and they can check and they can, you know, if we want this to be like a freedom tech, it needs to be open source. If it's closed source, it's going to turn into, you know, again, some sort of slave tech where it's going to tell you, oh, no, this is it. Oh, no, you can't ask about this. Like, you know, going to back to Gemini, like people were asking to generate images of like Tiananmen Square in 1989, and he would say, oh, sorry, I can't talk about this. Like, or they would ask about January 6th and say, like, show me a picture of a protest on January 6th in front of the Capitol. And the instead of giving you an image, it gives you a text that says, sorry, this is this is political and I can't talk about this. Like, how, what kind of like nightmare is this that you're asking specific questions and you're getting schooled by AI, you know, telling you what you are allowed to think about or what you're allowed to do. Like, it's just a dystopian future that I certainly don't want to see. So, you know, I know a lot of people, when they talk about AI and they look at the bad stuff, they think, oh, you know, it's going to take over your job or it's going to be a robot killer killing you. Like, I mean, that's not what I'm afraid of.
Bro, right.
I'm afraid of like a fucking nightmare, 1984.
Yeah.
Oh, you've talked about this. Well, you know, this is bad. You shouldn't be talking about this, or you shouldn't have those thoughts. So you should trust this. You know, you should trust what I tell you. And that's the nightmare that I don't want to see.
The idea that, or the intimidating You know, we face this intimidating challenge of trying to overcome OpenAI, trying to overcome the centralized fiat cantillionaire giants that are kind of taking over and consolidating power and influence in this industry. But it's like, if you can build, you know, a beta laptop app called Bitcoin that like convinces the world to feed it all of its energy, and it like starts to rival and compete with the US dollar system, like the biggest, most powerful empire that humankind has ever built in a matter of a decade, right? Like you can do, open source can defeat OpenAI, it can defeat Sam Altman, the fucking eyeball scanner dork, right? He looks like Howard the Duck. I mean, we can defeat them. And it's like, we talk about this all the time. It's getting cliche at this point on this show, but it's like, we talk about Bitcoin fixes this. What does it fix? Well, Bitcoin fixes everything. So what does Bitcoin fix today? It sounds like we have a solution. Bitcoin fixes AI, the AI problem. And it's that's why I think this is such a great idea. And I'm just, talk about the future you see. Like, what are your visions for SaaS for AI? Like, where do you see it going in the next year? Because AI is exploding, right? Like, it's advancing, it's getting crazy. Same with Bitcoin. So what about you? What about SaaS for AI?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so definitely, I mean, you know, we want to, like I said in the beginning, I want to start with Bitcoiners because I know they get it. There's less explaining for me to do, right? They understand the four problems that I mentioned early on. It's very easy to pick up if you're a Bitcoiner. But like I said, eventually I want to grow so much that the Bitcoiners, this is the platform they have. Either they run the open source models locally, or they use the platform if they need to or want to or prefer. But eventually I want to grow out of the Bitcoin market and become the, you know, every, like as a Bitcoiner, you talk to your no-coiner friends and they say, oh, I used ChatGPT and this is the answer I got. And you pull out and you say, well, this is the answer I got. And your answer is so much better that they're like, oh my God, how do I get some of that? Like, why do I, you know, that's what I want. And they're like, well, you got to get some sats. Like only way, like I will never accept credit card. Like there's no way for me to accept credit card. To get chargebacks, to get minimum, you know, fees and payments and whatever for, and then KYC, right? Like the minute I have your credit card, then I know who you are and I have to get this information and I have to get your address and whatever you name it.
You gotta
pay
taxes.
Makes absolutely, that's it. It makes absolutely no sense for me to accept anything else than SATs. So the only way you get the service is, again, having SATs. So like I said, your no-coiner friends will say, wow, like that's the AI I want. How do you get it? You need SATs and you go to SATs for AI. And then, you know, that's going back to what I said, like this is AI's the killer app for Bitcoin payments, I think.
I got another doozy of a of a sidetrack question. But I know that we're in later territory, so I'm just wondering I'm taking a temperature check.
No, I'm good.
No worries.
I got another question or two.
All right. Let me pull it up over here. The question, my friend, Charles, from last week as well. Actually, you know what? No, you know what? I have a different one. The question is, what's AI's future in relation to fiat, or where do you think fiat lives in AI's sort of realm in the future?
To me, I get closed source AI is fiat. Like they go hand in hand. It's the same logic. It's, I need you to pay a monthly subscription. I want to be the only player in town. I want a monopoly. I want to be the only the powerful people want to stay the powerful people. And so their business model, their whole logic, the whole idea behind OpenAI all along, the business plan has been, we will be the only one company and we will dominate this market. And then we can price gouge. We can, you know, we can do like everything that we want if we become the only player in town and we become, again, the cotillionaire effect, like same thing, like you're closer to the power, You're an element of the power. You're contributing to it, and you're perpetuating the existing system of giving power to a centralized few up at the top. So I think, you know, fiat helps closed source AI, and closed source AI helps fiat.
I want to answer this question too, based on kind of the same thing you're saying, but from a different perspective, is that I think AI kills fiat. And follow me along here, because we talk about OpenAI, we talk about their inefficient, high energy. There's probably a lot of waste. They're not making any money. They're speculating on your data, which most people's data is probably garbage. I mean, I know they don't use it the same way, but you know, they're using, however they're trying to use that data, I don't know how great it's going to be. But they're just throwing all this ineffective printed fiat money at the problem. On the other side, now with Sats for AI and these open source alternatives, you're getting the incentive structure of Bitcoin and the incentive structure of this OpenAI peer-to-peer network, where it's the people, they're going to be incentivized to have that division of labor and to build these models that are specialized for a specific task. They're more reliable, they're more dependable. The fiat system's data is corrupted with censorship. It's more getting more difficult to get signal out of it. You're needing higher energy algorithms, like almost to like x-ray that fucking scroll and like decode like all the bullshit that they put in with the censorship and just the like the fucking black Hitlers from the fucking AI models, like all the nonsense. People are not able to use the fiat AI system to get good outcomes that they're willing to pay for. But Sats for AI and the open source model, you get feedback, right? Like if a model sucks, people don't use it, and you get that feedback. They use, yeah, the money flows, and the activity per question, right? Like you can see, like, oh, they found something valuable and they kept using it and paying for it in this specific time frame instead of just having 100,000 calls they could use or whatever, and they just diddly dally with it for a month each month.
Right.
You get all this focus data, all these incentives, this division of labor, and the AI is more reliable, more dependable. You get better outcomes, and that compounds, and all of the money stops flowing into the fiat models, and all the money starts flowing into Bitcoin, into these open source models, and it just over time consumes it, eats it like a black hole, because that's where the signal is. It is
right.
It is taking, you're following the money to the signal. It's money, energy, money, value for value. It's completely distorted in the fiat world. It's slowly consolidating and getting more accurate and more higher fidelity in the open source Bitcoin world. So like that's how fiat is killed by AI
definitely. I mean, that's really, I see a ton of synergies again between Bitcoin and open source AI and
people across borders.
People
in Africa, people who can't get access to it.
Yeah, definitely. So that's another thing that we're working on, is we're looking at adding a new model that speaks what are called rare languages. So essentially, you know, languages in Africa that are only spoken by a few million people, but, you know, very localized in a quote unquote, you know, less or developing country. So it's not attractive for OpenAI. They're not going to say, oh, we're going to train our massive model that's already super big. Now we're going to also train it on that language, because there's a few million people there. They're like, no, that's not the market. This is not where we make the money, right? So we're looking to add like one of those models that then you can speak in, you know, Swahili or Wolof or, you know, some of those less spoken languages across the planet. And so that, again, it goes back to permission and making it accessible to everyone, is that you can speak in that language to the model and you will get answer specifically in that model. And if you can pay only in sats, right, like you'd have to assume, like, obviously people don't have the powerful computers, et cetera, et cetera. So you pay in sats, a few sats, to use a model, and that gives you the tool to again build something that can bring value to your community. You can build an app. You know, we have, again, we have the coding a model. So if you know a little bit about coding, but you can use an AI model to help you build an app or build a website or build whatever you need to build specifically for your community in a small village in Africa for a few sats. Like the value creation is just like, you know, absolutely insane. For just a few sats, you can improve the lives of people by just creating value. So that's one of the next steps that we also want to build.
One last point that I wanted to make, again, to kind of reiterate why I think the open source and the sats for AI is so much better and so much better positioned to defeat the centralized AI, is because, and part of this is like just a theory I've had, I've mentioned on the show before, that I think that there's this aspect of, you go back to quantum physics, right? Like the particle in the state that you're observing it is different than when it's not being observed. There's no outside observer, right? So the very fact that we are KYC'd, whether we really care so much about it or we're really big privacy advocates or not, whether we do that or not, the fact that we know on Twitter or in our financial system, on chain, AI, whatever, we know that we're being watched. We know that the Big Brother has got access to our data. We have this incentive to disguise our real intentions, disguise our real thoughts. We disguise it with irony, right? Like irony and like sarcasm and satire on Twitter and other places. And I think part of the reason the AI seems so fucked up, some of this is the programming and the DEI at Google, right? But some of it broader than that is because I think we've irony poisoned and we've sarcasm poisoned, and we're disguising our true thoughts, disguising the way we ask our problems, the way we admit our vulnerabilities. Even though we are maybe more open in the AI chat prompt, I think there's still an element of knowing not to say exactly certain things or the wrong thing, because you might get flagged, right?
In the system.
But you go, but to train models off of that data is, it's gonna be less signal. It's gonna be more abstracted from what your real problems are, your real questions are. And I think that this open source model removes that and kind of gets more to the core of the problems you're trying to solve. And since you're paying for them on a per request basis, it's also probably what you're paying for is just higher fidelity data too. Like when you know you're paying for something, you're using it for a much more real practical problem in your life that you need solved, not just dilly-dallying and like telling it to draw some Pixar meme or something like that to share on Twitter. So right. You're just getting better data as inputs to build models off of. It's just, I think that this is another reason why this open source model ultimately wins in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that's going back to what we are looking at, what's on the roadmap is eventually we're using the open source models and we're just a platform for them. But one way that we could kind of create a community is like, we charge, you enter a prompt, we charge, we give you the output, we give you the answer. And then potentially you can give feedback, which is something that you can already do with ChatGPT. You could say good, bad, or whatever, but you're just doing this out of the kindness of your heart. But like what we could see is you give us feedback and then I give you sats back. Based on your feedback, I'm repaying some of the sats that you paid. And then this feedback we collect and then we give back to the open source community, say, here is high quality data set with real human feedback in it, and that you can use to retrain a better model. And the beauty is we can even do what Llama did, or Meta, which released Llama, which is they said that they made a model open source, but they say you can only use it if you have less than 700 million users, which essentially says anyone can use it unless you're Google, Microsoft, and you're just like eliminating the big guys. Anyway, so you could do the same thing, which is like this is a data set that's free to use for everyone, except the very same people that we don't we're trying to fight. But
I would be willing to like use tools to anonymize my data that I'm saving locally on my machine and say, hey, there's a certain amount of my demographic profile that I'm willing to reveal to you, and here's my data with it. You don't know my name, but like, I'm a male, I live in North America, I'm a Bitcoiner, yada, yada. Here, here's my data. Use this in your models. And the other people can do that, right? But they choose the amount of data and the context in which it is consumed associated to who they are. Everybody's in control. They can use it and contribute to it. And more, you don't have to be a developer. You don't have to be an engineer. You can contribute just your inputs.
Right. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Yeah.
Hell yeah, Charles. This, man, this is a very interesting conversation for me.
Yeah,
and I think,
glad you like it,
and I hope that you'd be willing to come on again kind of soon.
Sure,
I think that
we should dig
a little bit deeper into some of this and more into the technology, and just kind of maybe we'll wait for inputs from people who listen to hear what they want to hear more about. We're gonna have all your information in the show notes, but I also wanted you to touch upon like A, where can they find this? B, what if they're interested in contributing, if they're an engineer, if they're interested in AI, like how can they contribute? How can they start playing with this or just some of this AI stuff, this open source AI stuff in general? Like where can they find you and how can they get involved?
Yeah. So I think the best way is just go to sats4ai.com. So sats and then four is the number four, AI.com.
Like
and
on your
on
hat.
There, sorry. Yeah. Like on my hat. Exactly. AI.com. And then on there where there's a link to our Twitter or Nostr. And so if you want to get in touch with us, that's the best way. The DMs are open, so you could just go and, you know, ask questions or reach out or offer help or suggestions or comments or whatever. Play around with the existing models, but if you have suggestions of you know, models or anything, you know, again, we're still in the early days. We launched only a few months back, so there's a ton of stuff that we can improve on and we want to improve on, but we want to hear back from Bitcoiners, right? Like we want to be the platform that Bitcoiners love, so they will dictate where the product goes from here.
And one last question.
Sure.
For people who are listening to this who have a lot of Bitcoin, you know, and maybe they are willing to invest or they want to like give you some capital or partner with you on something, where are you in that stage? Are you open to investment? You know, how can those people get in touch with you? Same process.
Yeah, I'd say the same process. We are looking at potentially raising money. We only want to raise money from Bitcoiners. So no, you know, traditional VC funds that will try to push accepting credit card are not of interest. We've had a few conversations with some of the kind of Bitcoin VC funds. We'll see where that goes. The most interesting conversations with that were actually with like business angels, like, and again, Bitcoiners, business angels, cause I think they get it more, and they understand where, you know, where this is going. And I also think, again, going back to like the fiat parallel and everything, like the way that we're building the company, we don't want to build it the traditional kind of startup way, which is, oh, you raise money for your seed fund and then you raise money for your Series A and then you raise money for your Series B, like, and you're going back, you're constantly going back for more and more money, which is good when, you know, again, money's free, your interest rates are low, but that's not the way we want to build it. We want to build this company kind of like step by step, following Bitcoin's examples and lead, mostly we are using the tools that we are pushing. So we are using AI. So I don't think like we will never need to be like a 100 employee company. Like, so we don't need to raise that much capital. But you know, of course it would fast track everything when you can get like an injection of capital early on. It would fast track the development of everything. And so it would make us, you know, fight back against the closed source model at a faster rate.
Do you see this kind of being more of a B2C, so like business to customer, app for customer? Or do you see a world where like you would work with companies and like build products and integrations for companies to use for tools, for internal tools, for something with their products, things like that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why we're also having conversation with regarding some companies, of course, Bitcoin company that at this point. But the way that I see it is, yeah, we want to have like this the easy kind of platform website UI for everyone to use. But very quickly, we're also looking at like making it into an API. So then, as you were mentioning, like you can, if you are more technically savvy, you can integrate this into your product or into your Nostr, or you can kind of like play with it. And then if you're a company, you can also kind of use that that as the platform where you get your AI again. And you would pay in sats, which again, if you're a Bitcoin company, this is what you have, this is what you want to, this is what you want to spend. Like it's just a, you know, kind of circular economy of services and in the AI space paid in sats with Bitcoin companies.
Hell yeah, man. I think this is the best idea I've heard in a while. I don't know. My mind's still thinking about all the possibilities.
Yeah. Well, I think again, it's such a it's a new field. We're early in AI. We're early in Bitcoin. So when you're combining two, you're very early, and so the possibilities are still out there to be found. And exactly how it turns out is hard to predict. But that's the space I want to be in. That's the space I love. I love, you know, technology. I love Bitcoin. The community at Bitcoin is just like incredible. Like again, I was talking about going to Costa Rica, going to that event. I went to El Salvador to another conference, talking to you guys, talking to people online. Like the amount of people that come to Twitter, just follow us, send a message. Great, you know, keep up the great work. Like it's just like so heartwarming. Like everybody's has the same kind of values and encouragement, and it's the place I want to be. I don't want to go back to like any other job outside of Bitcoin and trying to
hell yeah
sell any other product. Like it's right. Is where I want to be, and this is where it's my life is meaning. So
hell yeah,
you know.
If, well, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're interested in learning more, contributing, getting involved somehow, I'd really encourage you to check it out. I know I'm going to be trying to get involved with my spare time, and I think from a technical standpoint, as well as trying to work with Mike here to like create visuals, like some kind of visual story of the possibilities and how to use this stuff. You guys follow me online, you know the memes, you know the videos, you know the bullshit, but Mike's really talented. I think that we could collaborate and make something cool. So look for that in the future. I don't know.
Thank you, Dan. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. But yeah, man, great to have you on. Sats for AI, satsforai.com.
Awesome. Yeah.
Check it out in the show notes. Just check it out and use it. I mean, if you have 21 sats on a mobile wallet, go check out and do your first, you know, prompt. No sign up. It's easy to use. Check it out.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Charles.
Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate Podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!